Good afternoon. I'm just delighted being here with you and to welcome you into a special series called Reversing Killer Diseases. That is a most unusual claim because medical care cannot reverse these killer diseases. Medical care cannot reverse heart disease. Medical care cannot reverse diabetes or cure diabetes. Medical care cannot cure high blood pressure. Medical care cannot cure arthritis. But you can, if you begin to settle in on attacking the causes of these problems, because these problems are culturally related and they relate to the personal choices that we make every day. I remember some years back, I was much, much younger then. I had about 10,000 people at a big, big meeting. I had all these people stand up. I said, "Would you please stand up?" And 10,000 people rose to their feet. I had no idea that I had that much power. And then I said, so I got encouraged. I said, "Would you please raise your right hand, your right arm?" They all raised their right arm. I said, "My goodness, I didn't know I had so much power." I said, "Would you now please lower it to the level of your right ear?" They all did. I said, "Would you please now do me a favor and press this hand against your right ear, and everything that goes into your brain now, keep it there and do it." And that's what my wish is for you. Because I can give you all kinds of information, I can provide you with education, but unless you really begin to say, "I can do this," unless you begin to become motivated, you say, "Yes, I will try this for 30 days. Amen. And what happens in 30 days? No, you don't have to say, "I'll do this for the rest of my life." No, you just say 30 days. In 30 days, most of you will be hooked into the new lifestyle. Because what happens is you can reduce your food bill after 30 days by about 35 to 45%. You can save money, 35 to 45% of your, on your food budget. Number two, you will have the assurance that you'll be good to the earth. It will be ecologically the right thing to do. And you will also, after a while, begin to think about those animals. Would be grateful that you have made some choices. Are you with me? All right. And to help you with that process, we'll give you on Wednesday, this booklet has the handouts for our presentations here. So you can go to sleep now and rest because it's all written here. Wednesday night. On Wednesday night, I also want to have you write out all the questions that you have on your minds that pertain to things that we have talked about. And I will answer them for you on Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock. So, but the only requirement that I have is that you write out the question, and the question has to pertain to things that we have talked about here. It has to be of general interest, otherwise it's not fair to the general group here. So this is called U-turn, how to turn diseases around. U-turn, reversing disease, and it's going to be given to you on Wednesday night as a special gift. Okay? So, so what did we talk about yesterday? Do you remember? Do you remember this PowerPoint? And remember, I talked to you about this is the most important slide that I wanted you to really internalize. And we talked about, for instance, the Mexican diet. And we said most of what these people eat is the green color. It's starch, but it's unrefined starch. It's not white flour. It's whole wheat. It's potatoes. It's not potato chips. It's barley. It's corn, not Doritos. So when I said to you, as people become more affluent, they spend more and more money on these kind of foods that are now refined. And so we no longer eat the foods that we have here because the potatoes here turn into potato chips. That is mostly fat. So you increase the fat. We talked about corn is a longer start, but corn is now corn chips as largely fat, oil, grease. We talked about here we eat beans, and here we eat burgers, and burgers is largely fat and animal protein. And whenever you have this diet composition, where most of the calories comes from fat and from sugar, the yellow one, and whatever starch we have is now refined white flour starch, and then the blue, most of the protein that we eat is now animal protein. Whenever you have this kind of a diet, this is the American diet. Whenever you have this kind of a diet, and you take it to a country where they don't have these diseases, in 5 to 10 years, they will have heart disease, they will have diabetes, they will have high blood pressure, they will suffer from obesity. We give you some examples, didn't we? We talked about Japan. We talked about Lithuania. We talked about Saudi Arabia. Remember? They didn't have these diseases that they have now when they brought in the Western foods about 35 years ago. Now the Saudi Arabian countries, they try to get the Western foods out because they realize that 90% of the women in the Arab countries are either diabetic or pre-diabetic, and they became that way the last 20 years in response to the Americanization of their diet. So we talked about the idea that we have shifted about 35 years ago, going from slow foods to fast foods. We were going from eating at home to eating out, and we shifted from whole foods to processed foods, and in the process, we began to move these Western diseases forward ever so gradually but directly. And then we talked about the idea when you move from real food to industrialized products. You remember? You really begin to eat a diet that consists mostly or to a large extent of empty calories. When we talk about empty calories, we mean what? What does empty calories mean? What are empty calories? No. Yeah, that's it. Empty means they're emptied of nutritional value. Empty calories, they just have calories, but no nutritional value, which is what the body needs. Empty calories, and we suggest that over 40% of all the calories we eat in America today comes from sugar, oils, fats, and grease, and alcohol. No nutritional value. And then the last part was we talked about the increase in the meat consumption in our country. We've gone from 100 some pounds to 200 pounds. And particularly when it comes to these white meats, we always have been brainwashed to believe that white meats are okay. Chicken is okay. Turkey is okay. And I said, be careful. And then I gave you a formula. You remember the formula? I had this pediatrician come to me and he say, how can I give the mothers that come to me and their children, how can I give them a nutritional, educational instruction when I only have 10 minutes for a patient to diagnose the ill, to fix it up with a pill, send them home with a bill, and the next one comes in. How can I do this? I said, you can do it in 30 seconds. Remember? And I said, there are two things. What did I tell you? Number one, try to avoid foods that have nutrition labels. Don't eat them too often. I mean, low enough foods, they have nutrition labels. You get the idea? You got the idea? So that's why I said, don't eat them too often. You know, use them as a condiment, not as a meat replacement, because they're processed foods. Then I said, there's a second principle, and I never told you the answer. And you never asked me, except for one man. He said, by the way, I wrote a number one, and then I would write down number two. You never told me number two. So here's number two. Try to avoid foods that have warning labels. When you go to the meat counter in the store and you look for your chicken there, there's always a big sign, a warning sign. Wash, be careful, there's salmonella, and so on and so forth. Be careful with foods that have warning labels, animal products. Okay? Now, why do I kind of put meats and animal products into a position where perhaps we should not eat them too often, if at all? Why do I do this? Is it because I have become a vegetarian 40 years ago? Is that the reason? And I want everybody to do the same thing I do? No! You can do whatever you want to do. I'm just here to help you to see what the scientific evidence says, and then you make the decision. Don't let anybody ever dictate to you how you should eat. It's a very personal thing. But you can only enlighten people through science, through education, to help them to understand so that people can make a decision, and the decision comes from within. It cannot be put onto you. Are you with me? And you pray that the Holy Spirit will help you to make those decisions, because the decisions are probably against the cultural norm. Because the culture says, eat meat, whatever you want, you have to die anyway, you might as well enjoy it, and the doctors will save you tomorrow. True or false? False. But that's the message that you get. And so most people today, they die over a period of 20 years. We live longer, sicker. We have patients that come to us that are on 15, 20, 25 drugs. You have to be unemployed to just take care of meeting all the deadlines for the medication that you take all day long. You have to be on vacation. You have to take vacation permanently to take all these medications. Folks, that's not the way it was supposed to be. So I want to give you a better way to look at looking at things, to give you some options, and then you can make the decision. Is that fair enough? Are you open to those ideas? We talked about the fact that the World Health Organization has called and declared processed meats in particular to be carcinogenic, which means they cause cancer. And we're particularly talking about colon cancer. As a matter of fact, we have mathematical formulas where we can show you, depending on how much of certain foods you eat, animal products, processed meats in particular, so much likely will it be that you will have colon cancer in so many years. This is no longer just some opinion piece. This is science. I'm speaking at a medical school. I give you the science here, not some opinion piece. Are you with me there? So just when you hear something that doesn't make you feel very comfortable, don't brush it off and say, well, that's his opinion. No, no, no. I don't give you my opinions. I try to have opinions that are safeguarded and based on scientific evidence with huge studies. We also talked about to be careful with animal products, particularly cheese, because cheese is the number one source of saturated fat. What does saturated fat do? Saturated fat causes the liver to make excessive amounts of cholesterol, which then ends up where? In the arteries. When the arteries get narrowed down, they can no longer bring the blood and the nutrients to the different parts of the body, the organs, and we call this degenerative disease. It's not because you're getting older. It's just because your lifestyle is catching up with you. So, here are some of the nutritional issues with animal products. Number one, they're concentrated calories, because we learned yesterday that most of the animal products are high in fat. High in fat. Some of these products are 50 to 80% fat, and people always have the idea, oh no, I need to have meat because that's protein. Folks, yes, it has protein, but the number one factor of meat is fat. So when you think from now on meats, think fat. Number two, animal products are the main source of saturated fat. And the saturated fat is the driver of cholesterol in our blood. Number three, animal products are the only products that have cholesterol. You don't find cholesterol in a candy bar. Cholesterol is only found in animal products such as meats or dairy products or eggs. The egg yolks are one of the highest sources of concentrated cholesterol. That's why I always tell people, when they ask me, can we eat eggs? I said, of course you can eat eggs. We recommend an egg every February 29. That's every 4 years, right? You don't have to follow this exactly, but what I'm saying is, just be a little careful with egg yolks, okay? That's why you can go to any place nowadays and they offer you eggs any style. You can ask them for an omelet with egg whites. They'll do it for you. It has no cholesterol. Not that it's a perfect food either, but nevertheless, it's better than with the egg yolks. Then, animal products have no fiber. Fiber is very, very important. Do you know, in America, we get about 10 to 12 grams of fiber. I went to a special home for the elderly in Loma Linda. And you know, Loma Linda has many, many elderlies. I was invited to, my wife is a concert pianist, and so they thought maybe I understand something about music and maybe I appreciate it. So the ladies of one of these old folks' homes, they invited me to come and to listen to their choir. So this was a ladies' choir in old folks' home. The requirement to become a member was you had to be at least 90 years. That's Loma Linda. My neighbor is 102 years. He practiced bypass surgery, open heart surgery, until he was 95. And then he said to me the other day, I think I made a mistake. I should have practiced. I kept on practicing because now I'm at home and I have a new boss. So, Loma Linda. Yeah, I'm visiting there. And one lady had a big calendar on the wall, and it had some red circles, sort of once a week or every 10 days or 5 days, a red circle. And I said, "Madam, could you tell me what this is all about? Is this something very private?" She says, "It's my bowel movements." I said, "You mean you have one bowel movement every week, every 10 days?" "Yeah. And it's so painful. It's so much work." I said, "Have you ever heard of fiber?" "No." I said, "Americans are the most constipated nation on earth because we only get 10 grams of fiber, and fiber is what actually picks up of water as it goes through the system. Picks up water, and the fiber holds onto the water, and your food that is going through the channel, through the intestinal tract, that material, you know what I'm talking about, right? It's usually brown, in case you're not quite sure what I'm talking about. If you have fiber there, it comes out very easily. The evacuation is very easy. No problem. If you don't have enough fiber and you don't drink enough water, you sit there and you squeeze and you sit there for an hour and 2 hours. You read the whole Reader's Digest from one end to the other end, and you still, and then you finally can put a red circle on there. Folks, you get the fiber and the water, and you go into the special room, you sit down, and you're out. Fiber. Zero fiber in meat, zero fiber in cheese, zero fiber in animal products. Fiber is found where? In plants. So when you eat more plants, easy. It's a beautiful movement. No effort, no sweat. And once a day. Maybe it takes 2 days as you get used to it. It's no problem. Oh, you might have a little bit of a change there, because some people come to me and say, "Well, sir, have you heard that fiber, especially when you eat those beans, they have lots of fiber. They're very anti-social foods." Yeah, I know. You know, CHIP program people are during the second week when this thing really happens. I mean, they all sit there like they're sitting on a volcano, blasting off any moment now. But I tell them, if we all do it, nobody knows the difference. But you know, your body gets used to that. That's why it is. The body's not used to all the fiber coming in. So it has some turbulence there. But after about 3-4 weeks, everything is fine. You don't have to worry about opening the windows and all these kind of things. It's going to be all right. So fiber. Fiber is zero in animal products. It also, when you eat lots of animal products, you then therefore eat less plant foods, which means you have less fiber coming in and fewer nutrients, right? And then also the number six one is their processed meat and meats cause cancer. So this is the American diet. And this is what we do. About 50% of all the calories that we eat, 50% comes from processed foods. The refined, processed, engineered foods that are made for profit, not for health. Then you have about 35% of the calories that we eat comes from animal products. And again, these are not in your best interest because they have no fiber. They have all the other problems that we just talked about. And here's the most important thing that I want you to remember when you leave here today. Only 14% of the calories that we eat, only how many calories? 14% of the calories that we eat come out of the hand of a master designer. That's powerful. 14% of the calories that we eat, a very small portion of the food actually comes out of the hand of a master designer. We say our prayers over foods that are 86% man-made or made from by taking other creatures' lives. There was a time in the garden when Adam and Eve were there, and Eve was tempted and seduced by a mango. It was a mango, wasn't it? No? It's in the Bible. Remember when the angel was posted there? Right? And the angel said, you're no longer going to be in the garden here. And God said, there are two angels now there. And then the angel said, man, go. Okay. So, but you see, the point I want to make is that in the garden, it was just one food that tempted Eve. Today you go to a large supermarket, like in California, you have 60,000 foods and probably 59,900 you don't need. Once you know what's good for you, you can do shopping very rapidly. When I used to court my wife, you know, she was my girlfriend then, you know, I would go, and I don't like shopping as such, I would go through every aisle because I wanted to be with her. We would look at all the different things. Now, I go shopping. I can go shopping, no problem. I go shopping. And then in 10, 15 minutes, because I know exactly what I need. I don't need those 59,900 different things that are screaming at me and said, take me and I'll make you happy. And then you put it into your cart, and when you take it home, you're going to eat it. And you're in trouble. Is that right? So here's a very well-known lady. She said, our diet-related disease epidemic is fueled by the powerful meat, dairy, and junk food industries, and tragically supported by government policies that place profit over public health. When the government tells you, you should eat like the food pyramid or this new plate that they have, folks, that is not in your interest, it's in the farmer's interests. They want to make sure that the farmers sell their products. It's not necessarily based on health, but it's based on profitability for the people that they take care of. This comes from the Department of Agriculture. So I want to talk to you a little bit about heart disease. There's usually nothing wrong with the heart when people have heart disease, unless they had a heart attack. What's usually wrong are these coronary arteries that you see here on top. They become narrowed down on the inside, and they begin to look like this. Oh, let me first tell you this one here. Yeah, heart disease. heart disease. This is 1928. 1928, we estimated that one can expect one heart attack per year in average hospital in average-sized town. So that's 100 years ago. You could expect how many heart attacks in a year? One in a town, average-sized town. Today, we have 3,000 heart attacks a day. This is a new epidemic. People say, well, we've always had heart disease. No, we have not had always heart attacks. This is a new epidemic that emerged after the 1930s and really crested after World War II. Where then after World War II, all the soldiers came back, and we all said, chicken in every pot, and we had cigarettes passed out to them and so on, and heart disease was then killing every second person. Every second death was due to heart disease. It's now every third person in America. We have made a little progress, and this is the problem here. This is the cross-section of a coronary artery. Just imagine, the artery comes out of the wall like this, and we slice it, we cut it, and this is what it looks like in cross-section. The artery should be wide open from here. This is the artery wall here. It should be wide open from here all the way to here. But what do you see? It's narrowed down to about 35% of the original lumen, the space that is supposed to be there for blood to flow through. What happens next is all you need is a blood clot here, and you no longer can bring blood to the heart muscle, and the heart muscle dies from asphyxiation. It actually turns blue. It's a lack of oxygen. We call it hypoxia, hypo, not enough oxygen coming to the heart muscle, and the heart muscle dies. Why? Because you have cut the supply of blood to the heart because of this blood clot that is superimposed on a narrowed artery. Let me show you what I mean.
I first woke up, so to speak, when I was working on the anesthesia service, learning how to put people to sleep. And I was seeing my patients for the next day's surgery, for coronary artery bypass surgery, in order to bypass clogged arteries in their heart. Because it was late at night, I drew the man's blood test, and when I took the blood to the laboratory and had it processed, I couldn't believe my eyes. Now, normally, this liquid layer floating on top of the blood clot is quite transparent. It's yellow, but quite clear. You can see right through it. The blood in this patient's tube, however, was anything but clear. The serum floating on his clot was thick and greasy white. It looked like glue. In fact, it stuck to the sides of the blood tube when I shook the tube. I went back to the patient. I said, "Mr. Phillips, did you eat before you came to the hospital tonight?" He said, "Yes." I said, "What did you have?" He said, "I had a cheeseburger and a milkshake." And when he said that, I realized that what I was looking at in his tube was all the fat in the beef burger, all the butter fat in the cheese, and the butter fat in the ice cream and in the milkshake. And all this fat had oozed out into his blood and actually turned his blood fatty. Well, 30, 40, 50 years of keeping your blood very fatty creates changes in the blood vessels that are very dangerous.
Over the years, arteries can become clogged with fatty material. Then a blood clot can form, blocking the blood flow completely. If the artery leads to the heart, the lack of oxygen can cause heart muscle to die. That's a heart attack. If the clogged artery leads to the brain, the patient has a stroke.
The next morning, we took Mr. Phillips to the operating room, and I put him to sleep, and the surgeon opened up his chest. And from these arteries, he began pulling out yellow, greasy deposits of fatty material called atherosclerosis.
Do you want to see this again? What is the problem that you saw there? What is it called? Athero? What does that mean? It means narrowing and hardening of the arteries. They become very rigid. They are supposed to be like rubber bands, because every time that your pulse beats, they're supposed to open up and contract, open up and contract. This is what happens in babies, not so in people once they are 30, 40, 50, 60 years of age. Let me show you. We're born with clean arteries, they're wide open. By the time Americans are 20 years of age, they already have 20% narrowing. By the time people are 50 years of age, they already have 60% narrowing. And by the time you're 70, 80 years of age, you just have a little bit of blood flowing through a very tiny area, and you may not have any problems yet. Usually, you begin to get your first chest pain when you have about 70, 80, 90% thereabouts. But you can have your physical and you pass it, and you step outside of the doctor's office and you die of a heart attack without having paid your bill yet, which is a terrible thing to miss out on. You're dead. Because a doctor cannot diagnose the narrowing of the arteries or the likelihood of a heart attack unless you have chest pain or angina pectoris. Then the doctor knows, you have at least 70% narrowing of the coronary artery, and we have to do a treadmill test, and we do all these different tests after that. But otherwise, you may be 80% narrowed and yet have not any symptom. You have no chest pain. The doctor figures, you're just like wine. The older you get, the better it gets. You're doing fine. Don't worry about things. Okay. Now, the tragedy is that this process called atherosclerosis is not only affecting the coronary arteries, they're usually about the thickness of your little pinky. And they feed the heart muscle with oxygen and the nutrients. But this atherosclerotic plaque buildup takes place in every one of your larger arteries. It affects all of your large major arteries. Question. Do you have any idea how many miles of blood vessels the human body has? Would you take a guess? 20 miles, okay. How many miles of blood vessels does the human body has? Give me a guess. How many? No, he already said 20. You have to be your own person. Tell me what you think. Maybe 18. So you're very cautious, okay. How many miles? About 50 miles? 360 miles? How many miles? 1,000 miles? There must be a large person then, right? How many miles? 500? How about 60,000 miles per body? 60, I set you up, didn't I? 60,000 miles. Of course, most of the vessels are thinner than my hair, the capillaries. They're everywhere. Remember in the old days we used to do a wet shave and we nick ourselves as men a little bit and it bleeds for the next 10, 15 minutes because right underneath the skin there are these little capillaries. They're everywhere. They have one function to bring nutrients that you take in through food to all those 100 trillion cells. We are wonderfully and fearfully made. We're the ultimate engineering marvel. We're first class, and yet we put second class food into a first class body. That doesn't make sense to me. I want to talk to you today about first class foods. Okay? But let me just give you some examples. If the large vessels in the brain are being affected by atherosclerosis, then you have to worry about memory loss. You have to worry about spiritual, spirituality can be affected because the spiritual center in the body is in the frontal lobe of the brain. It's right here. So when these vessels, these arteries are no longer properly functioning, then you are no longer feeding the spiritual center adequately, and it's more difficult for the message to come through. Are you with me there? So therefore, I said to you the other day, what we eat, what we put at the end of our fork, has tremendous consequences, even with regard to our character, and I said, with regard to our destiny. So then you have to worry about these carotid arteries here. They can get plugged up. The coronary arteries. Then you have to worry about the kidney vessels. You have kidney disease because of narrowed kidney arteries. And then for men, ED, impotence. And many people think that, well, men, you know, when they're 45 years of age, well, things are supposed to slow down. And, you know, it's a normal thing. And we just get some Viagra and that's okay. I mean, after all, impotence is just a lack of Viagra pills. When I talk about atherosclerosis, there are always some men come to me afterwards. They wait till everybody's gone. And I know why they're coming. I said, sir, you said that atherosclerosis has to do with food, right? I said, yes. You also said that what happens in the kitchen affects what happens in the bedroom. Yes, I said that. Tell me what I have to change. I said, well, do something about smoking because it causes the penile arteries to contract. Do something about these high-fat foods because they cause the atherosclerosis to build up inside. And the penile arteries are 1/10 the thickness of your pinky. They're much smaller than the coronary arteries, and so they become very easily affected. And oftentimes, the first sign that atherosclerosis is affecting the body is not the coronary artery problem, but it's the penile problems. This is a food-borne illness. This is an illness that relates to our, shall I say illness? This is a lack of optimal performance as a result of our lifestyle, which is largely centered in what we do with our hands. Smoking, eating, and drinking. I have people that call me 6 months later, and they said, we're so grateful that we came to your program. And I said, okay, pay up. But you see, we're talking about diseases that you can influence. Atherosclerosis is something that we can do something about. I'll talk about more about this in one of my lectures in a couple of days. So these are all diseases that are related to atherosclerosis. Heart attacks, chest pain, stroke, memory loss, hearing loss, visual loss, high blood pressure, gangrene, impotence. All of these problems are largely one disease. And that disease is called atherosclerosis. It just shows up in different parts of the body, so we give it different names. And every specialist owns one of these organs. Is that interesting? And every specialist that is taking care of one particular organ will have his particular or her particular medications to take care of that organ. So we end up with sometimes 5, 6, 10, 15, 20 different medications. It's largely one disease. Have you ever noticed that when you talk to people when they get into their 55, 60, 65 years of age, first they have heart disease, then they have high blood pressure, then they have diabetes. They won't talk to you about the impotence, you know, that sort of something. And they're talking about, I'm depressed and I'm gaining weight. Have you ever thought about this? They're all interrelated. And the golden thread is called atherosclerosis. Once we can handle atherosclerosis and the inflammatory process that results from that, then you can affect the whole body, not just one particular organ. That's what's so exciting. You take medication for blood pressure, you just take care of blood pressure. You change your diet, you take care of all of these diseases that we call chronic diseases that are circulation related. There was a lady that many, many years ago talked about that. She said, perfect health depends on perfect circulation. Amazing. That was said over 100 years ago. We didn't know anything about cholesterol. We didn't know anything about atherosclerosis. That came later. She said, perfect health depends on perfect circulation. Can you remember that? So now you ask the question, what is causing this atherosclerosis? Well, there are risk factors. There are factors that drive this disease. And you find them in this arch here. The arch is helpful because it helps us to understand the importance of certain risk factors. The most important risk factor is the one at the very top, which is cholesterol, followed by smoking and high blood pressure. These are the three big risk factors that give us some idea about the development of atherosclerosis. We have mathematical formulas, we can plug the numbers in, and we can tell you what likelihood there is in a community, in a country, of how many people will die in the next 5 or 10 or 20 years from heart disease. Based on these kind of things, cholesterol, blood pressure and smoking, and also diabetes, obesity, and triglycerides, these are blood fats, and then the inactive lifestyle, people that are just couch potatoes. Stress and genetics might be a roar once in a while, but please note, the big things are up here: cholesterol, blood pressure, and smoking, diabetes, and obesity. Just to give you some idea, if you have a very, very high cholesterol, as you see here, you have high blood pressure, you are a smoker, you have diabetes, you didn't pass a treadmill test, you are 35-year-old male, 35 years of age, you have this kind of a profile: high cholesterol of 300, high blood pressure, smoking, diabetes, a positive treadmill test. The chances are for you to die within 6 years is 140 times more likely to happen than if you have ideal numbers for cholesterol, like 150. You have ideal numbers for blood pressure. You don't smoke, you don't have diabetes, and you didn't have a bad EKG. So you can predict, based on these risk factors, what the likelihood is of developing a heart attack. This is 140 times more likely to happen. But you can change that. Because here you see, almost all of these factors are related to our lips. Cholesterol is what we do with our lips. High blood pressure is related to our lips. Smoking is our lips. Diabetes is our lips. Obesity is lips. Triglycerides is lips. It's all related to our diet. That's why diet is becoming so important today. But there are other things that are important too. But these are the most important because they have the most pervasive effect in impacting our health. So what you put at the end of your fork becomes very, very important. That's why I talked to you yesterday about this. Fork and knives can be weapons of mass destruction, but they can also be instruments of health, hope, and healing. So I take you to Loma Linda now. The Adventist people usually live longer than most people in America. And the Adventist people, they have a very common lifestyle. You know what that is. These people, they usually don't use alcohol. They usually don't smoke. They usually go to church, usually once a week. They're fairly religious people. They believe in education very strongly. They have a good social network, a supportive network there. They're usually nice people, aren't they? You're not quite sure yet? Oh, I used to be a Lutheran. I know. These are wonderful people. I've lived in Loma Linda for 45 years after leaving Germany. So this is the Adventist lifestyle. But while the Adventists do everything pretty much the same, whether it's in Japan or in Holland or in Germany, they do something different, and that is in the area of diet. As you know, some of the Adventists are lacto-ovo-vegetarians. What does that mean? Lacto means dairy. Ovo means eggs. So these are Adventist vegetarians that use eggs and dairy products, but no meat. So they compared, with a lot of government funding, they compared Adventists that were meat eaters and Adventists that were lacto-ovo vegetarians. Okay, guess who did better? So they followed these people for many, many years, and then they counted all the deaths. Here's what they found. They found that the Adventists, remember, these are all Adventists, both groups, the Adventists that were lacto-ovo-vegetarians had only half the amount of high blood pressure when compared to the Adventists that were meat eaters. They also found out that two-thirds of the people only had arthritis in comparison to the meat-eating Adventists. And again, the lacto-vegetarians only had two-thirds the amount of prostate cancer when compared to the Adventist meat-eaters. And when it comes to colon cancer, the lacto-vegetarians only had half the amount of colon cancer. So you saw those pictures there, right? You saw the red column, this is the meat-eating column, and then you have the green column, which is the lacto-vegetarians. Who had less disease? Which color? Yeah, green. So why don't we follow a green color? If you want to reduce your hypertension, you know what to do. If you want to reduce your likelihood of prostate cancer, you know what to do. If you're going to cut back on your, you don't want to have the risk of high blood pressure, you know what to do. Go to which color? Green. Okay, so then the government came to us in 2000 and they said, we have money available for a major study. They actually spent over $30 million on studies done in Loma Linda. Loma Linda has done some of the finest and the best studies in the world today, looking at a population that is very similar in all areas except in the diet. And so they have said, okay, you people are all doing the same thing except you have different diets. So we found out that in North America, is there a thunder? No. Okay. It's a speaker? All right. Maybe I should go to this side. So they found out that in North America, 10% of the Adventists are vegans. What is a vegan? A vegan is a person that comes from Las Vegas, right? No. These are people that don't eat any animal products, okay? They're very strict. They're about 10% of the Adventists, and then 30% roughly of the Adventists are lacto or vegetarians, and 10% of them are fish-eating vegetarians, and 50% of the Adventists in North America eat animal products. Now, I don't know. What do you think it's like here in West Virginia? How many of the Adventist people do you think in West Virginia are meat eaters? How many? More than half? Okay. Semi. That doesn't count. Either you are or you're not. Okay. Oh, yes, I understand. Okay. They're occasionally, eating meat. Yeah, okay. So let's think about this. So they followed these people for 5 years, and they collected all the data on these people. They know when people become hospitalized. They know when people pass away. They know everything about these people. They look at 100,000 Adventist people in Canada and in the United States, and here's what they found. Adventist women that are meat eaters. Adventist women, on the average, weigh about 40 pounds more than vegetarian women. So if you ladies, some of you that are carrying some extra weight, if you're thinking of maybe you want to lose some weight, what would be a good idea? What color would you choose? What color would you choose if you want to lose weight? Who has the least weight among the Adventist women? Those in the green color, right? And then you look at men. The difference here is very similar. Adventist meat eaters, on the average, weigh about 30 pounds more than Adventists that are vegetarians. Well, we can also look at diabetes. These are Adventist meat eaters. Their diabetes rate is about 6.3%. If, on the other hand, you want to become a vegetarian, then you only have to worry about diabetes in 1.6%. So meat eaters have four times more. Adventist meat eaters have four times more diabetes than those in the green category here. So you say, well, I'm not ready. I mean, I live in here in West Virginia. I mean, I couldn't become a vegetarian here. I mean, that's virtually impossible. Oh, okay. And you say, well, but I'd be glad to be, maybe I settle for by becoming a lacto-vegetarian. So I'm moving in the right direction. So instead of having 6.3% of the people having diabetes, now it's only 4.3%. Well, you see, here, when you are a full-blown diabetic, ultimately you're going to most likely pay the price in amputations. This is at the end game of diabetes. Oftentimes, you lose the foot, and then you lose the leg below the knee, and then you cut it further, and then the next leg. And you say, well, I don't really want to lose my leg. I just want to lose maybe a few toes. Just have my amputate some toes. I settle for being a lacto-vegetarian. And he said, wait a minute. I mean, you're willing to sacrifice your toes? I mean, is that food that is that important to you? I mean, why don't you just go all the way down to this here, to the yellow color? Okay, or maybe go all the way down here. Then you don't have to worry about these things. And then when it comes to high blood pressure, again, Adventist meat eating Adventist meat eaters have 4 times more high blood pressure being treated than vegetarians. The green color is in. And then you look at cholesterol, and this is now Adventist meat eaters, 15% have high cholesterol on medication. When it comes to vegetarians, you can hardly find anybody on medication because their cholesterol levels are so low. When I go to China, when I go to the province where people live very simple lives, they don't have the Western foods there, they have cholesterol numbers of 90, maybe 100, 110, 120, and then they get nervous. They say, oh, it's already up there to 130. We're like the Americans. We're going to have a heart attack any moment. I said, no, the Americans, they have 200 and 250, and they are happy when they have 200. It's too high. The ideal cholesterol that keeps you safe from heart disease, from atherosclerosis, is 100 plus your age. So what should yours be? 172. We're in the same category. Good. 100 plus age. So if a man comes to me and he is 91 years of age and he says, my cholesterol is 191, I said, you're doing just fine. I mean, if you're younger, I would like to see it at maybe 150 or 140, but you're doing fine at 190. You've lasted that long, you're going to be fine. So what's an ideal cholesterol in general terms? 100 plus your age, 150, 160, something like this. Not the 200, like your physician tells you on the reference sheet from the laboratory. This up to 200 is normal. Folks, cholesterol like that is only normal for people that normally die from heart disease. Don't be normal. Worldwide, we know that you cannot find heart disease in populations that have very, very low cholesterol numbers, like 100, 120, 130, 150. Anything above 150, 160 puts you at risk for atherosclerosis, a progressive disease. Here's Dr. Willett from Harvard. He said, epidemiologists, people that study the epidemic of these diseases, they have long known that the major determinants of our killer diseases are dietary and lifestyle factors. We are digging our graves with our own front teeth. Grandma used to say those things, but then it was just an old wife's tale. Now it's science tells us that. We have libraries filled with studies that have taken hundreds of millions of dollars, and we know exactly what we're trying to recommend to you here today. All you have to do is read this book, How Not to Die from Heart Disease, or How Not to Die from Brain Diseases, Digestive Cancers, from Infections, How Not to Die from Diabetes, How Not to Die from High Blood Pressure, How Not to Die from Liver Disease, from Blood Cancers, from Kidney Disease, Breast Cancer, Prostate Cancer, Parkinson's Disease. Folks, it's all there. 2,000 scientific references. These are all the references in this book. The scientific data is, this is all references. These are all the scientific references that this author quotes. He's a personal friend of mine. I think I mentioned to you this morning that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia saw this book and bought 3,000 books and brought the author to his kingdom to teach the people. And there's a special lady that wrote many years ago. She said, I saw that many sickly among the church members who made themselves so by indulging their appetites. If we wish good health, we must take special care of the health that God has given us. We must deny the unhealthy and perverted appetite. We need to eat less of the refined foods. I mean, how did she know about refined foods? And she said, we have to eat more coarse food. You know what coarse food means? Unrefined food. Food as it comes to us designed by a master designer. These are fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and legumes like beans and lentils, and a few nuts and seeds, avocados, few. That's what she's saying. Eat more coarse food. And then she says, it should be free of grease, fats, and oil. Hello? How does she know this? This was over 100 years ago. And then you have a book here, which is a best-selling book in America. Came out in 2007. Let me take a look here. 2007. Yeah. Penguin Publishing. This is a book by a very famous surgeon educator from the Cleveland Clinic, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, the revolutionary scientifically proven nutrition-based cure. And he says, be careful with fats and oils. And he's very adamant. He said, not one drop of oil. Now, we may not always be exactly in alignment with those kind of things, but by and large, he is the man that has shown that you can take patients that were given to live a limited number of months. These were the walking dead. They already had all the surgeries, all the medications. And they came to him. And they followed his program of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, very little salt, stay away from the sugar, stay away from anything that's artificial, stay away from oil, because God didn't make oil. God didn't make olive oil. God made olives. These are refined products, and we can easily overdo it on these kind of things. And 20 years later, this is a book about these patients. 20 years later, all of them but two are still alive. This man doesn't know anything about this special lady author. This person is a friend of mine, Cleveland Clinic. When he speaks today somewhere, they pay him $10,000 for an hour speech. How to reverse heart disease. And you can just go on his website and you can find it there. Or you can read this book here, How Not to Die. Or you can take a look at my book that you have back there. It's called Health Power, How to Reverse Western Diseases. And you have a cookbook there too. So you can take a look at this later on. We begin to realize that this is the new science that is emerging now. There's a new specialist coming up now. We now have, you know, we have specialists in heart disease, cardiologists, we have specialists in eye problems, ophthalmologists, we have gynecologists, we have obstetricians, and now we have a new specialty called lifestyle medicine specialists. And these are physicians that have been trained in nutrition and in exercise and in communication and in how to motivate patients and how to teach patients through office staff and nurses. Because we recognize that most of our diseases today, the chronic diseases, are actually totally, not only preventable, but reversible. But medication and surgeries do not cure these problems. When you die from high blood pressure, you have been taking medications for the rest of for whole life, and you die with medication on board. When you die from diabetes, you've been on insulin year after year after year and more every year. It hasn't cured the problem. But you can cure the problem if you're willing to make some changes by changing the underlying root cause. How we eat, how we exercise, how we think, and how we are nicer people. It's almost too easy to take seriously. It doesn't cost you anything. You thank the Lord for the foods He made for you, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, and a few nuts and seeds. You said, Lord, this is what You made for me. And You said, eat, enjoy, and be happy. And it's cheap. You reduce your food budget by 35 to 45%. Don't come to me and say, well, I cannot eat these kind of foods. I have to eat at McDonald's. It's cheaper there. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. He said, well, we're living in a food desert. There's nothing I can find that is really healthy. That's not true. I talked to the people here, and they told me that you have markets, open markets here, food markets, don't you? In some of the areas, look for these food markets and support your local farmers. do what you can. I know sometimes it might be difficult in some areas, but let's do our best. Just to let you know, this is scientific evidence here that suggests that 70 to 90% of all of our diseases that are chronic diseases are totally preventable and subject to regression and reversal. Experts today estimate that up to 80% of chronic disease and premature death in the country could be prevented by making significant changes in diet and lifestyle. It's in Time magazine. You don't have to read medical journals. It's everywhere. So you can prevent these diseases. You can avoid these diseases. Let's see what we can do. First of all, I want to give you some idea of what medicine cannot do for you with these diseases. You know, we can take care of broken legs. We can take care of infectious diseases. We have outstanding physicians that can do these things. They can do diagnosis, everything else. But when it comes to chronic disease, we have very, very few cures. This is a Newsweek magazine. You see this man here. He is a bare-chested, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 scalpels pointing towards the midline of his chest, and the front cover of the article says one word with 2 letters that will save your life. What do you think the word is? It says, this is a special health report in Newsweek. It said, one word that will save your life. What's the word? N-O. And you say, well, isn't bypass surgery helping us? It can. It probably can save some lives. But in general, probably 80% of the bypasses are not necessary if we could motivate people and educate people to make changes. That's our greatest need. How do I motivate people? That's what I said to you earlier. Put your hand on your right arm and everything that goes into the other ear, keep it in there, listen to it. And if you say, well, I've forgotten half of it already, it's okay. Buy the books, Prevent and Reverse, How Not to Die, or get the book Health Power. There are over 2 million copies that are in circulation in 36 languages. We bought only one language today, but it's all out there. God has blessed these books, and including the Optimal Diet Cookbook. So you have heard of stents, angioplasties. You know, the problem with all these procedures is they don't last. I had one gentleman come to me and he said, I had a bypass, a quadruple bypass 18 years ago. I said, you are lucky. Did you make changes? Yes. Oh. But you see, usually when you have a bypass, the surgeon does the job, but nobody is there to explain to you. From now on, you have to go from this diet to this diet. Remember we talked about that yesterday? You cannot play around anymore. You have to go from here to here. You have to be total vegan. There's nothing else I can offer you if you want to keep that bypass open. If you go the halfway, you're playing with your Russian roulette. What about these drugs for cholesterol? People come to say, well, I don't need to change my diet. I just take some cholesterol pills and they drive it down. True. They drive down the cholesterol, but it doesn't protect the heart. It just makes the cholesterol number look good, but it hasn't changed the physiology of the heart. Let me tell you here, here's a major article in some of the medical journals. It says, there is, quotes, there is no evidence that prescribing cholesterol-lowering drugs, known as statin drugs, to patients at risk for heart disease will reduce their chances of premature death in the short term in 4 years. No evidence that it will really give people longer life extension. Here's an editorial in the Journal of the American Medical Association. It quotes, we have underestimated the risk of statin drugs. Approaching 20% of the patients are at risk for muscle aches and pains and at risk for diabetes and memory loss. These drugs cause problems in 20% of the cases. What's the benefit risk ratio? And the article says, we can expect to, and here it is. You need to understand this. You can take 100 men, they have never had a heart attack before, and the doctor says, I want you to take these statin drugs to bring the cholesterol down. It should really be down to 160 or so. I want you to take these drugs. It says nothing about the diet. I want you to take these drugs. They'll bring the cholesterol down to 150, 160. That's what you need to do. It would take 100 men to take these drugs for 5 years at a cost of $500,000, and you will have saved one, maybe two heart attacks. We can do that in just a few weeks without any money involved by changing your diet. And the pharma industry says, well, it's not too bad, $500,000 for saving a heart attack, for saving a life. Hello? We can do it for nothing but following a master's designer's prescription and design. Blood pressure pills. Here you see an ad. The doctor told me I'd probably be taking blood pressure pills for the rest of my life. True or false? True. Wrong. If you're making lifestyle changes, you don't need the medications in most cases, unless they're very, very high blood pressure issues. In most cases, you can handle the blood pressure by making some simple lifestyle changes like losing weight, getting into a daily walk of half an hour to an hour, and really cutting back on salt. That's one of the big ones. And really eating more vegetables, because that's high in potassium. That's all you need to do. The doctor tells you, you have to be on these cholesterol-lowering drugs for the rest of your life. True or false? True. Does it do any good? Questionable. Create side effects? Yes. Does it cost money? Yes. But you don't need to have these drugs if you're willing to make a few little changes. Remember that when it comes to medication, prescription drugs are the number three cause of death in America. We're not talking about heroin or these illegal drugs. We're talking about prescription drugs. Prescription drugs are the number three cause of death in America. Here's Dr. Osler, famous physician. He said years ago, one of the first duties of the physician is to educate the masses not to take medicines. Have you ever met a physician that educates you not to take the medication? We can't do it anymore because physicians are in a time bind. Physicians are no longer working for themselves. In most cases, they're working for a system, for a clinic, for a hospital, for a system. And they're being told, you've got 15 minutes and that's it. Next patient. And half of the time, you have to use for entering the data into the computer. Have you noticed that? When you have a visit, they don't even look at you. They just, and they're, oh, yeah, okay. And so they basically have 10 minutes to diagnose the ill, to match it with a pill, and to send you home with a bill. Next one. So many physicians today are feeling very depersonalized. They said, we didn't go into medicine to become extensions of the pharmaceutical industry. We wanted to really help people, to turn them around. And they are now becoming very, very interested in this new specialty of lifestyle medicine. They are not taking the nutrition courses they've never had. They're not taking courses in how do you talk to patients so they understand you. That's a lost art. How do I motivate patients? What do I say? I mean, most physicians don't even put you on a scale anymore to weigh you because they don't want to offend you and say, well, you're obese or you're overweight, and they may lose you as a patient. Especially when extra weight is so dangerous. We don't want to offend. Keep the patients coming. Now, see, this is what we do. Most of what we do in medicine today is we're treating symptoms. We're treating cholesterol. We're treating high blood pressure. We're treating depression. But we don't really take care of the cause of the problem. So I have a question here. Tell us, we are all blind here, right? Hello? Hello? We're all blind here. We cannot see what is on the screen. I would like to ask this lady to tell us what you see. I'm going very close. Maybe you can speak into this mic here. Tell us, what do you see? You see there are people in green and?
And they're mopping up, there's broken pipes, and they're trying to mop up the water and trying to keep from getting wet, the one with an umbrella.
Oh, very good. Do you see that? This is the medical team. I mean, the water is coming down from the ceiling, the pipes are broken, and what do we do? We get new mops. electronic mops, or we get umbrellas. We pass out umbrellas. They're color-coded umbrellas. We can charge for them very well. And we do everything we can to keep the mop, the floor dry. We're mopping, mopping, mopping. That's what medicine does. We need to become involved in our own health. We need to get the plumbers to come in. I'm the plumber. I'm trying to help you to see where the leaks are, how you can make some changes in your diet, in your exercise, how you think more positive thoughts, how you lift your heart to the Lord. It's all part of it. And this kind of approach is very, very expensive. You see, in 1960, we spent 5% of our income on medical care. This year, it will be 19% of our income we're spending on medical care. Folks, you're spending a lot of money, four times more than we spent in 1960, percentage-wise. And all you have to do is get to the cause of the problem, how we live. Because how we live is largely influencing how we die. Is it so hard to understand? Is it hard to do? Yes. You want to do it with your partner. You want to do it with your spouse. You want to do it within the family. Because you don't want to divide the family and that you cook differently than the person that is next to you. That's why we have a CHIP program where we introduce 30 people, 20 people, 10 people. I've had 1,500 people in my CHIP classes. They would come night after night after night to learn, to understand. And so we can reverse these diseases. We can do it by looking at what happened in Norway. This is Norway in Europe. High rates of heart disease. Then the Nazi people came in. They occupied the country. They took out all the livestock food they feed to feed their soldiers. And what happens next? Heart disease rates dropped dramatically. Diabetes rates dropped dramatically. People lost weight because they no longer had the livestock that they could use because the soldiers occupying the country were taking all the livestock. The Germans made the Norwegians healthy. And during war, imagine. We always thought, well, stress causes heart disease. Well, this is war, and heart disease diminishes dramatically because people ate differently. And people said, well, you really think this is a diet? Well, they said, let's wait. When we go back to the pre-war diet, when we have the animals coming back into our diet again, then what happens to the diseases? And here you see what happened. Within 1 year, they're coming back. We can take monkeys, we can give them a typical hospital diet, and in 19 months, these monkeys will have died of massive heart attacks. We always tell our patients, don't stay in the hospital more than 19 months. It's a dangerous place. You don't get healthy food in hospitals. We can take these monkeys, and this has all been done. And we can create this disease process, atherosclerosis. And then just before they have a heart attack, we remove the egg yolks, we remove the olive oil, the sunflower oil, any kind of oil we remove because you always need cholesterol and fats to create this problem. We remove it, and within 2 years, the arteries are wide open again in these monkeys. We can bring cholesterol levels down by 25%. It's no big problem. Here's the results from the CHIP program, from our program. 20% drop in 30 days. Here's Dr. Ornish's program. Dr. Ornish had 48 heart disease patients. And half of these patients, he told them, I want you to be on a very, very low-fat diet, like a vegetarian diet, a vegan diet, very strict diet. And then the other half of the patients, he said, you can have the American Heart Association diet. Guess what happened after 1 year? After 1 year, on the vegetarian, very low-fat, healthy diet, the cholesterol dropped 24%, and the plaques, the atherosclerotic plaques, the buildup in the inside of the arteries, had diminished in 82% of the cases in 1 year, while on the American Heart Association diet, the plaque has gotten worse in 53% of the people. The diet made it worse. Because you see what happened is we thought if we go from this diet to the Heart Association diet, that will take care of it. You have to go from here all the way to here, and then you have the results. Here's Dr. Ornish. He has proven that you can open up blocked arteries without drugs or surgery. by going through a lifestyle program. Yes, Dr. Esselstyn, I showed you the book. I talked to you about these heart disease patients, the walking dead. You put on a very simple diet, plant-based, very low fat, whole foods diet. And he said, I want you to eat only fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and legumes. Stay away from fats, stay away from oils, stay away from fat, sugars, and salt. Stay away from foods with nutrition labels, none. No meat, no cholesterol, no saturated fat. Here's what happens. Here you see the arteries of a heart artery. This is a coronary artery. The artery is wide open here, but then it's very narrowed here because it's narrowed because of atherosclerosis. The plaque is narrowing the artery. There's very little blood flowing through it here. That's why this patient had dramatic chest pain, angina pain. This is 2.5 years later, the same artery, no medication, no surgery, wide open again, because these arteries open up in response to treating the cause of the problem. There's the book that we talked about. I want to close now.
How did you lose so much weight? What kind of diet are you on?
Can we have sound?
Well, the short answer is I went on essentially a plant-based diet. I live on beans, legumes, vegetables, fruit, no dairy, and it changed my whole metabolism, and I lost 24 pounds, and I got back to basically what I weighed in high school. But I did it for a different reason. I wanted to lose a little weight, but I didn't ever dream this would happen. I did it because after I had this stent put in, I realized that even though it happens quite often that after you have bypasses, you lose the veins because they're thinner and weaker than arteries. The truth is that it clogged up, which means that the cholesterol was still calling buildup in my vein that was part of my bypass. And thank God I could take the stents. I don't want it to happen again. So I did all this research, and I saw that 82% of the people since 1986 who have gone on a plant-based, no dairy, no meat of any kind, no chicken, turkey, if you can do it, 82% of the people who've done that have begun to heal themselves. Their arterial blockage cleans up. The calcium deposit around their heart breaks up. This movement has been led by a doctor named Caldwell Esselstyn at the Cleveland Clinic, Dean Ornish, whom you know, out in California. The doctors Campbell, father and son, who wrote the China study, and a handful of others. But we now have 25 years of evidence. And so I thought, well, since I need to lose a little weight for Chelsea's wedding, I'll become part of this experiment. I'll see if I can be one of those that can have a self-clearing mechanism. We'll see.
I hope you're helping.
In closing, afflicted by chronic disease, changing the food you eat is the single most powerful lifestyle change you can make to restore your health. Fork and knife, they can be weapons of mass destruction, or they can be instruments of health, hope, and healing. We recommend a new cow. Thank you very much. Shall we close with a word of prayer? Our Father God, you have provided us with all the ingredients that we need to be in a program that keeps us functional and serviceable. We pray that as we contemplate some of these scientific facts, as we think about the scientific evidence, that you help us to embrace some of your concepts so we can honor you because of Jesus. Amen. Okay, I think the bookstore is open. If you want to take a look at these books, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease and How Not to Die, and take a look at the book Health Power. We'll see you tomorrow morning at
9:30.
11 o'clock. Tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. I'm going to tell you the story. Tomorrow I have a special lady here. Where is she? Tomorrow, are you going to be in the morning? Yeah. I'll have you speak tomorrow morning to the class. 2 minutes? Okay. And I tell you the story of a man that was a cardiac cripple and became a champion on a bicycle traveling 3,000 kilometers. I'll tell you the story tomorrow. You'll be amazed.